I'm Jeremy Hobson, and ahead of the Iowa caucuses on February 3rd, we're joined by 2004 Democratic presidential candidate and former head of the Democratic National Committee, Howard Dean. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, how important is Iowa as someone who was once a candidate and made all the headlines on the night of the Iowa caucus?
The most headlines of anybody that ever came in third.
Right.
Iowa is pretty important for two reasons. First, it is a test of organization. I was neutral when Hillary Barack Obama ran against each other because I was the chairman of the Democratic Party. And when Obama won in Iowa, I realized he could not only win, but I realized he could be president because the organizational effort that it takes to win requires tremendous organizing. And so that's part number one. Part number two is you do get a boost from finishing first. It gets you name recognition. You particularly get a boost if you're not somebody who was the favorite and you finish first.
But do you think they'll have a leg up on all the rest of the competition if they win Iowa?
I'd rather win it than not. Let's put it that way. Yeah. A leg up sounds a little strong. Iowa's not the end of the process. It's only the beginning of the process. But it certainly helps to get off to a good start in any endeavor that you want to take on.
When you talk about organization, as you look at the candidates right now, who's got the edge in organization in Iowa?
All I can do is repeat gossip because I haven't been out to Iowa. But I'd say the top four plus Klobuchar probably have the best organization. Warren, Buttigieg, Sanders, and Biden, and then Klobuchar. I would say those five have organizations that are fairly deeply penetrating into Iowans' consciousness on the ground, which matters more than television.
How many tickets out of Iowa do you think there are for presidential candidates?
This year, maybe more than usual. The usual saying is there are three tickets out of Iowa. You had to finish in the top three. And in fact, that was true. After New Hampshire eliminated the rest of the field, Edwards, Kerry, and I traipsed around for a while before I dropped out. And it was consistent. It was Kerry first, Edwards second, and me third. And obviously, John Edwards and I were hoping that things were going to be different, but they weren't. This year, there might be four or five tickets out of Iowa because the top four are essentially tied. And so who knows what's going to happen? Plus, you started out with 21 candidates.
Well, and actually, one of the things that I've heard from voters is, well, they, and I guess they is the, like the Democratic Party, shouldn't have allowed so many candidates. It's too hard to follow.
Well, the candidates think otherwise, as you are well aware.
Right.
They are upset that we had any kind of criteria at all. What we didn't want was the farce that was going on in the Republican Party in 2016. And we didn't want people, which also went on in the Republican Party in 2016, who were three reasonably well-respectable people who didn't make any effort at all except show up to the debates. George Pataki, Gilmore, former governor of Virginia, and Rick Santorum. They didn't do anything except show up at the debates. That's not a serious campaign. I don't think the Democrats are obliged to have people who aren't serious on the stage. But we got criticized even for doing what we did. And next year, I think we're going to have to, of course, relook at that again.
What do you think the changes would be if you were to make changes now to the process based on what you're seeing this year and what we
saw
last time?
Well, if I were to make changes to the process, I'd move Iowa and New Hampshire somewhere else. I mean, these are two states. I think it's the third and the fifth most whitest states in the country. Our party doesn't look like that. Our party is diverse. It's young and it's female. So I don't want to knock Iowa and New Hampshire out of the process altogether because I strongly believe that small states need to go first so that people can actually eyeball candidates and, you know, their bankroll getting on television. That's not what influences our nominees process. But I do think we do need to have more smaller states. When I was chairman, I added Nevada and South Carolina because they're so diverse like our party. So I think we need to rotate small states around. There's probably some others, New Mexico, Oklahoma, which are big geographically but not very big population-wise. Those are the kinds of states you want to have, including Iowa and New Hampshire, but not necessarily first all the time.
Do you think that that's going to be possible, though, to move Iowa and New Hampshire out of the first position? Because in the case of New Hampshire, at least, don't they have a law that says they have to go first?
Yeah, but that's really irrelevant. I mean, the chairman controls the rules committee and appoints the rules committee, and the rules committee decides what the rules are, not the Secretary of State in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is a particularly bad problem because not only are the demographics bad, but with the Republican majority passed a bill to suppress college students' votes, which passed and was supported by the Republican Supreme Court in New Hampshire. So, you know, young people are one of our core constituencies. For us to start the first primary off in a state where our constituencies are deliberately disenfranchised by what I would consider a corrupt legislature. So I don't see any obligation that the Democratic Party has to start off in a state that doesn't look anything like our party and that suppresses one of the most important voting groups for Democrats.
So having said that, what do you think of Michael Bloomberg's strategy of skipping the early states and focusing all the energy on Super Tuesday?
Well, you know, we're just going to have to see how it works. I have a lot of respect for Michael Bloomberg as a politician, as a human being. This is an incredibly unorthodox strategy. I don't really think that you can win the Democratic nomination without a strong ground effort. And he could build one, and he's, you know, his operation is first rate. So it's a novel way of doing it. It's never been done before, and I think we'll just have to see what happens.
Why do you think, at least based on the polls right now, that it does really look like a jump ball in the early states and in general?
You know, the party's undergoing huge change. And young voters are coming to the fore. If you look at 2017 and 19 in Virginia in 2018, our party, the people who are now electing, not just our voter base, but we are now electing people who look like our party. We are much younger, much darker, and much more female. If you look at the photos of the freshman Congress people and the freshman legislators in, over those 2 years in Virginia, we're transforming the country, or the either that or the country's transforming us, which is more likely. And we're electing people who look like and think like Americans. And that's what the future of the party is. And that's going to continue. So, you know, if we do nominate somebody who's my age, that's a holding pattern. But they're going to have to appeal to these other groups. And ultimately, these other groups are going to be the ones that are in power, just as they are now getting in power in state legislatures and Congress.
Do you think that this nominating process could go to the convention this year?
It always could. I mean, everybody writes about that every year or every 4 years. And the last time it happened was 1952. So generally what happens is somebody gets momentum because they win a few primaries and some significant primaries, develops a lead, and then they become the nominee before they get to the convention. We did come fairly close when I was chair in 2008. Obama and Hillary really didn't – that race wasn't decided until June. So it could happen, but I wouldn't waste a lot of time reading speculative stories about it because, again, it hasn't happened since 1952.
Are you worried about divisions within the party that you're seeing on display in some cases right now?
Well, there don't have to be any divisions unless people want there to be divisions. You know, yes, this is a competitive process. So far, I think it's going reasonably well. Obviously, some of the skirmishes of the past couple of weeks has not been terribly good. But, you know, the divisiveness depends on the candidates. If they want to be divisive, they'll be divisive. And if they want to help the country, they'll do the right thing. I'll just tell you a two-second story. So when I was losing and having, you know, I was the lead, candidate for a long time, mm-hmm. since from about September to about 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses, I was leading the pack. And the other candidates, of course, did some work together to try to bring me down. That's part of politics. I was very bitter about it. I was furious. And in Wisconsin, which turned out to be my last primary, I was furious. And Al Gore, who had endorsed me, called me. And he said I ranted and raved for about 15 minutes at midnight. And finally, he very patiently listened. Finally, he said, you know, Howard, this is really about the country. It's not about you. Now, I was so angry that the only person that ever could have said that was Al Gore, who was really screwed out of the presence of the United States by a court that was way out of bounds and deeply partisan. For Al Gore to tell me that really just – it was like a shot to the jaw. We owe this country something, and we don't owe ourselves. So whoever's going to lose this race better get in line if they care about the country. And if they don't get in line, they don't care about the country. That's all I have to say about it.
Who do you think is going to win Iowa?
I have no idea. Absolutely none. Zero. I mean, look, you know as well as I do, there's a new poll leader every third week.
Right.
So who knows?
That is Howard Dean, the former governor of Vermont, former chair of the Democratic National Committee. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.